Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your co-host, Joe.
And I'm Ryan.
Today, we talk about... onto our medium shot. Tell me, Ryan, what was your history with the Invincible show?
My history with the Invincible show was, I remember when it was coming out, it was all over social media. And I remember seeing the clip from the end credit scene of episode one, which I don't really want to spoil here because I think everybody should go see it.
You know what? I'm just going to say...
probably been everywhere.
Let's just say right now, spoilers for season one, too. If you're watching a spoiler discussion for season two, you better damn well have seen season one. Just say it.
I'll give you
a few seconds to get off now if you haven't seen season one. Mm-hmm. And that's your 3, 2, 1 spoilers away.
Everyone's dead. No. Well, kind of. Anyway. But, yeah, so I remember, sort of hearing the hype for it, and it was, around that time where I was like, oh, yeah, I need to watch something. I need to watch a new thing, so I chose Invincible and just immediately fell in love with it. I remember seeing, the comics around. I didn't know much about them, but I remember seeing them, in bookstores or whatever. I remember seeing Invincible on the cover, Mark Grayson on cover stuff. I never really read the comics. I want to now. I can't, though, because they've doubled in price since the end of this season, but maybe I'll get lucky one time. I almost got lucky. I didn't tell you this, but there was one on Amazon going for $55, the omnibus of, the first volume, but the delivery shipping cost was, $30. So I was like, no, I ain't doing that. So, yeah, kind of sucks, but makes sense. But that's my whole history of it, is the show came out and then I fell in love with this universe and I've loved every moment of it. It's kind of been a small obsession so far, not as big of an obsession that I've had with Avatar. However, I have bought the Fortnite skins for Invincible, and by time of recording, the Avatar skins come out on Friday and I will have bought those by the time that happens. So yeah.
Invincible's one show that I didn't buy into the hype immediately or for a very, very long time after. I heard great things about it. I got spoiled on just in general YouTube videos about movies. They played that clip where Nolan kills all the Guardians of the Universe. So when we were doing our Ryan Explains Invincible to someone who's never explained Invincible, who's never seen Invincible episode, that was the only thing I really knew about the show, was Mark's dad was a supervillain. I didn't know if that was episode one or a big finale twist, though. Thankfully, that was the episode one twist, so I pretty much had open seas ahead of me. As far as the plot went, I had no idea what to expect. Eventually caught up on season one and absolutely loved it. I think, generally speaking, Amazon Prime is doing the most interesting things with the superhero genre right now. They've got about 3 superhero shows so far, and I haven't seen The Boys yet, and neither of you, I believe. But between this and The Tick, I think they're really doing unique things with this genre. The Tick
and Gen V, but that's kind of like a spinoff of
The Boys. It's a spinoff of The Boys. Well, I'll just plug The Tick for a little bit. I think it's a delightful Silver Age inspired romp with just its wacky characters. It's really fun and funny and upbeat and quirky comedy series with a really cool lore that doesn't feel like anything Marvel or DC's doing. I don't know much about The Boys, but I know it's a very violent take on superheroes, sort of in the vein of Batman, sort of a Zack Snyder take, if Zack Snyder went even further with it, like a grounded superhero world where the characters are even less optimistic than his versions of Batman and Superman. And then we have Invincible, which also is very violent, very grounded, but also feels the most like a comic book adaptation. it feels like a classic superhero world with higher stakes than normal. So it's that perfect middle ground. And the entire thing, as far as I'm concerned, exists to subvert genre cliches about the superhero genre. And I adore Invincible for that. Every time you think you know how it's going to go, oh, I've seen this in a million superhero projects, Invincible veers the other way and does something interesting. Like even, well, let's get into our close-up now and discuss it all. But I want to talk about Omni-Man first up. Season one, it looks like a typical evil Superman trope, which maybe was subversive when it first became a thing, but it's tired now. But he's such a complex character. He's not just evil Superman. He's a guy who's been conditioned by his culture to be a warmonger and a genocidal maniac. But that loving family man isn't fake either. He does love his son. He does want Mark to join him. And he's a little annoyed that Mark's got this morality where he's like, okay, but this is just a fun distraction. In the grand scheme of our lives, this world's going to die, and what's it matter? But then season two takes those kind of interesting beliefs and challenges them even more. It teases a redemption story for evil Superman, which I've never seen before. So just with one of its core characters there, it's already doing it's already taking things in a different direction than I'm used to seeing. And I have even more examples, but you can comment on that if you want.
Yeah, it's just kind of, the first comic, I think, for Invincible came out in 2011. So
I thought it was earlier.
Superman.
Wasn't it like 2003?
No, it was 2011.
Oh.
No, 11. I don't know. That's what I've seen online. But, yeah, it's just kind of like the stuff with Mark and Nolan, Omni-Man and Invincible, is probably some of the best father-son, protagonist-antagonist, like superhero stuff that I've ever seen. I don't know. It's just a combination perfectly of the writing, the acting for both J.K. Simmons and Steven Yeun. They're phenomenal at their parts. And the show really does shine when it's just the two of them talking about their goals or their different ideologies, and really goes to show how, in my opinion, this is going all the way back to the end of season one, is why Nolan is so mad, is because I think deep down he wants to be who Mark is. He wants to have that morality with these humans that he's been around for about 20 years. But he's still kind of indoctrinated by his people to bring them into the Empire, the Viltrum Empire, because it's so great and we should share this greatness, which is kind of like, you know, Fire Nation thing, but it's not a steal. It's a homage. I just love that stuff. And then season two, you expand more on Mark's morality and his sort of him not trying to become his father, but you still see hints of it here and there, but he's still sticking to the core of who he is. And he still does make mistakes because he's relatively a new superhero, but I don't know. It's just, I think, as a superhero show, it's so unique that it's a parody of a lot of things, but also pays homage to those classic superhero tales with its own twist on them as well. Like multiverse stuff, the Justice League, different dimension stuff. And it's just really nice to finally see, like,
it's embracing its comic bookiness. Yeah,
it's embracing it while also keeping it grounded at the same time. And I think all that praise and credit should go to Robert Kirkman, who was the original like comic book writer and is the co-creator of the show. And he's given full reins for it. And I love that. He's also a co-creator of The Walking Dead.
Who would have guessed, giving the creative reins on the show would be a smart thing.
Crazy, right? It's almost like it worked for not only this, but also The Last of Us. But hey, that's just our opinion.
You don't have to give the people who made the things the same job in the adaptation, but it's a good way to ensure it's consistent quality.
Or you should at least give people the reins who have actually, you know, seen or played those games in order to do the adaptation, unlike that people too. On the Halo show. Anyway,
we're not there does seem to be a there is a concerning trend in media where people in the writers' rooms don't care whatsoever about the thing they're adapting. They just got stuck with an IP.
I saw this video of like Phase 4 Marvel writers and how most of them said that they didn't read the comics when writing for like the original or the new movies. And it's just like, why hire these guys then? Like, I don't understand. I just don't get it. But
now I know with Marvel, I've heard in the past Kevin Feige's idea behind that was he wanted fresh blood in the Marvel studio system that wasn't beholden to the comic books. He wanted people who could kind of learn the gist of it and add a fresh voice to it, which I understand, but it's also a little counterintuitive because they can just as easily mess it up as they can add a fresh perspective.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Like, you can add a fresh perspective, but you're adapting something. So it's like, what do you... So just make something new then. Don't adapt something and then completely fuck with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I understand his point of view, but it's like I don't even know. I was going to bring the Bible into this, but it would have made no sense. But it's like adapting Lord of the Rings, but you make the Fellowship all children, like, just to make it fresh. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, just stick to what you know, because you don't know it. I don't know.
Do the source material, mostly. Now, here's a good example. I mean, I want to go back to characters later, but speaking about adaptations, I've got to bring up that one moment in the back half of season 2 where they make fun of how animators cut corners to save time and just get the product done. I saw that in the original comic book.
That was so funny.
That scene was basically pulled straight from the comic book, but in the comic, the whole scene was a gag on the comic book creation process. So when they adapted it for this show, they obviously had to change that because the joke didn't work. So they make it about animation shortcuts instead. So that's a good example of staying respectful of the source material while also updating it for the different medium in process of adaptation. You kept the spirit of it alive, but didn't do a one-for-one because it wouldn't have made sense.
Yeah, exactly. Like, a lot of things don't illustrate over from book to screen a lot of the time. It's kind of the same thing with... I keep going back to Last of Us, but... they were talking about how the reason they didn't do the spores in the live action is because realistically, if there were spores airborne, then everybody in the entire world would already be infected. And also, it's just hard to articulate whether or not where the spores are, how spread they are on screen. So. I know a few people were upset about that, but also it's just like, okay, that makes sense. And they added their own little thing of how they have like a hive mind as well, instead of that's not in the video games from what I remember.
See, things like that I accept because there's a reason behind them. It's not we just felt like changing this because we didn't like it, which seems to be the answer a lot of writers' rooms give nowadays. So,
yeah, by the way, you were right. It was 2003. I was thinking of 2011 was when the omnibus came out. That's my
OK. Bet. I thought it may have ended around then. I didn't know if that year.
Yeah,
was...
around then. Yeah, I remember like hearing about it or something. I don't know. Or like in 2015 or something. I don't know. I don't even know.
So going back to the characters, I liked how Omni-Man and Mark paralleled each other this year. In season one, Omni-Man was more of a bad guy with a bit of nuance, and Mark was just a pure good guy. But in this season, they nearly start to trade paths in a way. Nolan shows serious regret for his actions in season one. His reintroduction is him just flying through space, endlessly contemplating his actions, and then he's going to throw himself into a black hole until he just saves these people who were also going to get thrown into the black hole, which is, wow, he just saved these people with no reason. He was playing hero for 20 years and maybe a little bit of that still in him. And all these bug people who their lifespans are something like a year. They're even more insignificant than humans, and he looks after them. He protects them. He has a baby with Andressa and cares for it like his own child, just like he did with Mark. I mean, it is his child, but I mean, they're a quote-unquote inferior species. He's purple. Yeah. He doesn't even look like a Viltrumite.
Because they only live for around, like, a year. A year in human years.
And even as Nolan later says to Mark, I don't understand why I feel regret or these caring emotions, or it's weakness. It's not what I was taught. I don't understand it. He really wants to deny that he feels these things, and he's just aimless this season. He's nearly going to let himself be executed by the Viltrumites by the end until Alan shows up and says, well, I can get you out of here. Why don't you come help us? Seems like a fool's errand, but you can do something else, you know. And the end of the season is him realizing, oh, I miss my wife. Not his pet, his wife.
Yeah, that part's really funny because I went on Twitter to see who, like, everybody's reactions. And a lot of people had the same feeling, like, you mean the person you called a pet? You missed them? And just, like, they felt it was not, like, disrespectful in the way of, like, oh, how dare you say that? Like, but not in terms of, like, it's a disrespectful writing thing. But it was just a funny reaction. But, yeah, I liked how they both paralleled each other, but also stuck somewhat to what they were. Less so with Omni-Man. He's starting to get more of that morality. That scene, episode 4, is probably my favorite of this season because it's, again, it's mostly Invincible and Omni-Man, like two of the best characters in the show. And
I like that Mark doesn't dismiss him out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
He's upset about Adam, and then he's like, okay, but you're still my dad, and I missed you more than I thought.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's just kind of that, it's, you know, it's that thing of when you think about, like, I don't have any personal experience with this, but just like the separation that kids and parents have, and then you want to be mad at them for leaving without, you know, really saying anything, but then you still have that connection to them, and I think that was really well done. And I loved that. I loved also in the scene that Mark just didn't back down at all. He wasn't just like, oh, okay, I understand. He's like, no, why would you fucking lie to me again? Like, again, like, do you not understand what you've done? And then later on in that episode, Nolan's whole breakdown of like, why do I care? Like, they were weak. Like, why? I'm not supposed to feel this way. And he's just like, he's having his own mental breakdown to his son. And it's just beautiful. It's beautiful writing just to allow, I'm going to get kind of political here, but just to allow men to have emotional breakdowns on screen. Because you didn't really have that for, you know, most of Hollywood history. And I just love that they allow that in this show for a lot of different characters. Especially with, but mostly Mark and Nolan. But
especially
I love
the toughest guy there is.
Yeah, exactly. He's supposed to be the big bad guy. He's supposed to be, you know, the villain, but he still has conflicting thoughts and feelings. And that's why I love him. That's why he's my favorite character, is because yes, he can bring down an entire planet in a matter of minutes if he wanted to, but he's still battling with, but he's still battling with the emotions of, you know, that he's sort of earned and gained with his time on Earth. He's become more human, even though he doesn't want to admit it. Both learning from Debbie and both from his and from his son as well. He's just such a great character, and it does kind of suck that he's not in this season a lot, but when he is, he's used perfectly.
I think he was used the right amount. I wouldn't have needed to see any more of him than I got. I like that they held off on him for so long. The end of episode 3 was his first appearance. Or was it episode? Yeah.
End of episode 3, and then saw him all of 4. And you saw him sprinkled out like a little bit throughout the second half.
Which I thought was a ballsy move, because conventional wisdom says bring back Omni-Man right away. He's the fan favorite. But no, they make you wait on it, and it's not a bad wait. They keep you interested with other things. Oh, and then they bring Omni-Man back. Just because that was the important thing, right? Just as Mark is starting to finally move on and get over it, Omni-Man shows back up. Not that he was anywhere close to over it, but just when he was starting to college and becoming a superhero in his own right and coming to terms with everything Nolan did and left behind in his wake, oops, there he is again. And now it all comes flooding back to the surface. Now I got to deal with this head on.
Yeah. So it's such a beautiful, it's such a shocking moment too, because, and I think what really drives it is the music, right? It's not like the classic build up tension. And then when you see Nolan, it's the, and then cuts out. It's this beautiful, like euphoric, you know, Oasis type music. And then you seem like, oh, hey, Mark, it's been a while. And then you're just like, what the fuck? Like you have so much conflicting emotions because you're on this beautiful planet. But then it's, you see the guy almost killed his son from last season. So you're just like, what the fuck? And that's one of my favorite moments of the show. And I think it's well-crafted filmmaking.
Yeah. Now, I keep teasing Mark's parallel to Omni-Man this year. But I think while Omni-Man's getting redeemed, Mark is trying to decide, okay, but am I more like Nolan than I think I am? And he is, actually. Because the very first chunk of the season one, episode one makes it very clear, in a meta sense, that in every other version of the multiverse, just about, there's, save for a couple, he joins Nolan. He's kind of the odd man out here, but in most other versions of reality, he wasn't that far off of joining Nolan and agreeing to be on his side, for one thing. And then when he does become a superhero with the GDA, he's got the same stubborn streak with Cecil that Nolan always had. You know, he's a little better in that he agrees to work with him, but when his interests don't align, he'll disobey him. He'll go his own way. That, like Nolan always did. And also in his relationships with Debbie and Amber, where they both can see, well, Debbie especially was like, yeah, Nolan always did this to me. And you're kind of doing this to Amber too. But like, that's just part of being, that's just part of dating a superhero. That's what we have to put up with. But, and he's like, oh man, I didn't really want to be this guy. I know what it was like growing up with Dad. And now I'm putting this on the people I care about too. I'm like him in that way. And then I think there was a couple other things too, but it all culminates in that last episode, which has a beautiful parallel to season one. When in season one, Omni-Man's kneeling over top of Mark, beating the crap out of him, and Mark's on top of Angstrom Levy, beating the crap out of him. Except in season one, Nolan stopped. He listened to reason, he calmed himself down, he held back, he left. Mark pushed through to murder. And I don't blame him because
I don't blame him. You know,
when he snapped Debbie's arm, I was ready to kill him too. I'm like,
yeah,
can't hurt Debbie.
Don't.
How dare you?
Don't threaten my mom, dude. I will murder you in a second.
But I'm just saying, different circumstances aside, Nolan in the same kind of position could hold back and leave. Mark didn't. So I think that says a little something about his character. He is more like Omni-Man than he thinks. He can be.
Yeah, for sure. But I also, that's just because he's a lot younger too. Right? So he's not fully able to control his emotions. And again, Angstrom broke his mom's arm. So we didn't really see any of that. There's like every person has their limit of, like, they have their, like, fuck around and find out limit of, like, okay, you're, like, you're casually threatening my family. That's not cool. I'm going to try and knock you out. Oh, you physically hurt my mother? You're not going to have a face anymore, buddy. Like, it's just, it's going to be gone. I don't care if I'm stuck in this other dimension. You physically harmed someone I love? See ya. Like, I understand what you're saying, that Omni-Man was able to hold back. But and Mark wasn't, and that's a very interesting parallel.
Well, that's
two completely different circumstances.
Well, I'm just saying the whole parallel of the season is he like Omni-Man? And there was also that scene in episode 4 or 5, I think, when Omni-Man basically tells him, when you're against enemies this powerful, you can't hold back. It's kill or be killed. You are powerful enough to deal with it. You can't hold yourself back. So he takes that lesson from Omni-Man to heart and finishes the job in the end. So basically the entire season is saying, is Mark like Omni-Man? And he might fight for different reasons, but his actions basically end the same way. He commits murder. He leaves Debbie and Amber in the lurch to do his job. He shirks authority, who maybe is more wise than him, for his own goals. He's kind of just a superhero who does what he wants. And once again, his reasoning is coming from a better place, but his actions do the same thing Nolan did at the end of the day. Not saying he's still a better version of Nolan, and that's the important thing to consider, but he is more like Nolan than he wants to be.
Well, yeah, I think it's like the whole, you know, I think that is what's smart about the writing as well, is how no matter how much we want to be our own person and differ from, you know, our parents' way of life or ideology, we can't deny that we are a lot like them. I've found myself doing that a lot with both my parents, of like, oh, I'm not like him when I act like this. But I've even, like, even small things were like, man, I cough like my dad. It's really strange. Just like small things like that. But it's funny because with Invincible, and when he beats up Levy, he has like a full on mental breakdown because it goes fully against what he believes is morally right. He does not want to kill, just because he can, unlike his dad, who will just do it. So when he does do it, he realizes, like, oh, fuck, I went past my breaking point. This is not a good thing. He has this whole debate with himself. Like, he's going insane. He's like, I didn't want to kill him. I had to. He was threatening my mom. Oh, fuck, now I'm stuck here forever. I'm good. Like, it's great acting from Steven Yeun once again. I wish they did fucking Emmys for voice acting, because I think he would get one every time this show comes out.
It was a very powerful scene with him wandering through the desert covered in blood, just talking to himself, trying to rationalize. And to me, that's another subversion of the genre and even just fiction in general. I find that when it comes to characters' first kills in things, a lot of media just glosses that over as, oh, it's heat of the moment. It's, you know, you're going to have a lot more of this going forward, so whatever. Especially in superhero stories where a lot of the morality is about the sanctity of life and preserving life, I feel like even in those genres, death can be glossed over quite a lot. So to see Mark take a life at the end of this season, it's a big deal. The whole back half of the episode focuses on it, about his guilt. It messes him up. And even guys like Cecil are like, man, you know, the world is not worse off. The world is not worse off for you killing this guy. You're not Nolan. You did okay out there. And Mark's like, well, you weren't there. But in his mind, he's a murderer now. It was a pretty justified killing, all things considered. But that doesn't take away that he did something he never thought he'd do. He discovered, like you said, he pushed himself past a breaking point he didn't know he had. And now he's wondering, okay, well, if I pushed myself past that breaking point, how far can I go now? I've crossed a line.
Yeah.
And will I do it again? What'll make me do it again? Am I going to end up like mm-hmm. Nolan yeah. at the end of this? If I crossed that line into Nolan territory that I've been scared of all season. So it's he's worried about mm-hmm. his own future now. This season also puts Mark through the ringer just like crazy. So he has to deal with the fallout of Omni-Man.
It sets up the kill well of him. You know, is he going to kill? Is he not going to kill? Because he's got that fight with the kaiju underwater because he has to marry a fish. Like Aquad's ex-wife or whatever.
Yeah.
Aquarius, I think, is his name. And then Batman's sidekick or whatever when he gets put into dark dimension.
Yeah.
And then the when Anissa shows up, which she's bad. I know what the fuck she does in the future of comics. I won't spoil it here, but it's bad. Even then, when she's literally beating the living shit out of him, he's still like, no. I won't kill her. The fights with the other Viltrumites, he's not holding back, but he's also still not trying to kill him. And then here, he doesn't want to kill Levy, but he just loses all control. And that's the real takeaway from this, is that it's like he didn't really choose to kill him. He just let go. He just fully blacked out, in my opinion. And
yeah.
That's what he's most upset about, is that he didn't feel like he chose to do that. He just kind of let go and let his dad personality take over, like his dad's personality.
I think it's a bit of both, right? Because the first thing he says after he kills him was, I thought he was stronger, which is immediately him trying to justify it. And then afterwards, he's like, okay, but I lost control. But no, wait, he deserved it. He needed to die. He was very powerful. But, I could have held back. He just kind of has this back and forth of bouncing back and forth between trying to justify it.
Trying to justify it.
But I won, and I could have stopped. Mm-hmm. He could have, and he knows that. But also, he kind of realizes he didn't want to, and then he feels bad that he didn't want to, but he also knows he kind of had to keep pushing forward. Otherwise...
Well, he says he could have stopped, but when you're watching that scene, there's no way.
Right,
there's no one stopping him. There's no one stopping him. He loses all control. When you get pushed over your limit, there's nothing stopping you. There's just nothing stopping you. Every person has their limit, and once you go past it, there's just no stopping it. He's trying to justify it too. Like, oh, I could have stopped it. Like, why'd you do that? But there's no stopping him.
Good point.
Fucking broke his mom's arm.
Yeah.
He's dead. Dead to rights.
Yeah. I did like the plot line with Angstrom in episode one. I thought he had a really good idea. He's like the only guy who can go between multiverses. So, all right, let's just get all of me together and form a super brain and we can solve all the multiverse's problems. Take the best elements of every multiverse and throw them into the other ones. Which unfortunately goes wrong, but it was a cool concept.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting way to start off the season for sure. I don't remember much from episode one besides that. because it was like, what, 6 months ago?
Yeah, I just made some notes on all the episodes so I could refresh a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked, not to deviate too far from the Langstrom, whatever his name is. Yeah. From the fight at the end, because there's so many like little cameos too, or little like hints there. There's like a full on like Batman one that they don't see. And it's really funny because that happens in the comic books.
And Spider-Man.
The Josh Keaton Spider-Man made me lose my shit. It's funny because it was like Agent Spider, because Sony or Disney, or they didn't even approach them to like get the rights for it, because you don't really need to for stuff like this. The sniper he hits him with when he comes back is apparently a Fortnite gun, which is really funny because the Fortnite skins cross over. Yeah, fun. And then you see in one of like Langstrom's flashbacks from a different dimension, like a sinister Invincible, who is apparently the worst of all the bad Invincibles. That was the one with like the long yellow cape and killed his son.
That was in front of him. Look.
Yeah. Yeah. So I liked that. It was a good like multiverse fight. And I love how Josh Keaton Spider-Man made fun of Spider-Man multiverse. Like, we've done that recently. Yeah. Really funny stuff.
So what about everybody
Amber's
else?
Better.
Yep. For sure.
Amber's
they toned her down
last season.
Toned her down.
They toned her down and they actually made her like a real person for once. Or not for once, but they finally did.
Well, she wasn't
just
anger.
A complaining, whiny girlfriend the whole time.
Yeah. I liked her arc because it was, okay, well, I know you're a super, like, to me, it all culminated in that ending where she broke down in front of Mark before they broke up. And she basically tried to explain to him, okay, like, you're a superhero and I respect what you do, but I feel abandoned and alone by it. But I also feel like I'm not allowed to get mad at you for that. Because why should I? You're saving people and I'm being the complaining girlfriend and that's not fair. But also, my needs aren't being met, but I can't ask you to, like, it's such a complex situation for her. Like, I felt for her this season because it was tough.
It's the most adult breakup I've ever seen on screen.
Yeah.
Where it felt too real. I was like, fuck, this is like, this is getting heavy, because I think it's the line, she says something sort of like, is like, I know I shouldn't feel bad, but I do. I have feelings too.
Yeah.
And I was like, as soon as she said that, I was like, oh fuck. Like, cause it's true. There are two sides to every story. And you know, what I like about this, season with the romantic arc between, Mark and Amber is that they do sort of have like a break for a little bit when he goes off into space. And when they come back, they still try to, and they have a really nice date night where before Anissa shows up and you see that they still have this strong connection.
Yeah.
But then they break up later because she feels guilty for being sort of a crutch for Mark, or like something to use against him. But also she's terrified of what could happen to her, and just also feels bad about, you know, feeling bad. She feels bad about feeling bad when he goes away and she doesn't feel like she can do it. And it's just from her perspective during that scene, I totally understood her, and which is a complete opposite from season one where it was like, oh, I'm mad at you for abandoning me. I knew you were a superhero the whole time. Huh? And then at the very end, she's like, oh, I forgive you because your dad almost killed you. It was like, okay.
She was very frustrating in season one. This season, she felt more reasonable emotionally.
Yeah.
She's like
very understanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is what I've read. It's a complete difference from how they break up in the comics, where in the comics, Amber's like hanging out with another dude, but they don't do anything, but it just drives like the forced breakup sort of thing as well. It's not like as emotional as it is in the show. So I think it's a good change.
Yeah. I also liked how before they broke up, even they had one good night together just before Anissa came, but ever since he went off into space, he barely spent any time with her. And whenever he did afterwards, you could feel their chemistry was kind of gone. Both of them were just forcing it. And they knew it. So that's why their
100%.
That's why their breakup felt very mature. Like you said, it was okay. It's not really working for either of us right now. And, you know, I love you, but it's not gonna, and we both know it. So we should just stop.
Yeah. It's like a tragic, it's such like a tragic superhero love story where it's, they both love each other and really care for each other, but it's just not working.
And it's not gonna.
And it's not going to, because of how different their lives are and how different their passions are. And that is very true to a lot of relationships in real life. Not to say everyone's a superhero in real life, but it's just how, you know, with long distance relationships, people
feelings
go
aren't
off
always
into,
enough.
Yeah, military or to different schools. It's just too hard. I've done long distance relationships and it sucks, dude. It's not fun.
Same. Yep.
Yeah, I really appreciated that they made Amber a character. Not that she wasn't a character in season one.
She was more one dimensional.
Sort of, yeah, that they sort of redeemed her, which is good, which is, which I'm glad that, I don't know if they, if that was all planned, or they were like, we're going to make Amber such a bitch in season one, and then she's going to have a great arc in season two.
I feel
which
like,
probably not, they, but.
They probably won't admit it, but I feel like this was a reaction to the backlash she received in season one. Because she was the most common complaint about season one. Everyone pointed to the frustrations with her character. So I feel like season two kind of just did everything season one did well and picked up the slack in the areas it wasn't as strong. And Amber being the biggest improvement for the supporting cast.
Yeah.
Other characters like William didn't get a whole lot to do. And
yeah, he was less in this season as well. There's
Rick
a lot of
more
characters
though.
That kind of got like a short stick.
Yeah. I thought Rick was really interesting. More so, especially at the very end when he's like, you wouldn't understand how I feel. And Donald's like, I do, actually. I've been killed and rebuilt.
I've died 39
times. Yeah.
Yeah.
The same body you probably have, so I've actually done this.
Yeah, that was kind of like a very weird arc for me, because I don't know about you, but I don't have much experience of dying and coming back to life and having my memory erased and being a robot, actually. So I couldn't relate to it that much. But
I feel like it's
the dialogue saved it, where
Rick's
like, I have these memories and I am Rick, but I don't feel like me. And he just having sort of like this out of body experience of someone who went through just complete trauma. So that's what saved it for me. But other than that, I was like, okay, where are we going with this Donald finding out he's a cyborg arc?
Yeah, I feel like it's a parallel for disability or just extreme trauma, where it's like Rick said, he feels like a piece of him is missing and he doesn't really know who he is without it, where like something in your life changed, status quo irrevocably altered, and you don't know how you can possibly move forward with it. And it's like, well, like, I'll never be quite the same as I was before. And I don't know how to deal with that. So I feel like, like, I haven't had experiences like that so strongly myself, but I feel like that is a relatable, what's the word I'm looking for? Can't think of the word. It's not going to come to me.
That sucks.
Just like, hidden meaning in story.
Subtext?
No, that's not it.
I know
it when I hear
I'm
it, but I'm
brain.
Not going to get it.
You're going to text me 5 hours from now. It was this
allegory.
Word.
Allegory. I got it.
There you go. Sound it out.
But I think season two in general, one of the biggest pluses to me is that the supporting cast got a lot more fleshed out than they were in season one. I was a lot more interested
in
everybody's general stories. Like, just for example, look at episode 3. Mark wasn't even really in it. Like, he starts having sex with Amber at the start of the episode, and they're like, and let's move on from that to something completely different.
To Alan, yeah. I love that. I thought it was going to be an entire episode about Alan. And I
basically was.
At that point, I was like, okay. Because it was like, we haven't gotten, it was like episode 3 at that point.
Yeah.
I think it was like 20-ish minutes of the episode, so it was pretty good. I like that. I love Alan. He's a great character. And I love his whole, I loved how they flesh out his story of like, if he doesn't, like if his brain isn't destroyed, he can just come back stronger with each time he dies. That's just
what
in
doesn't
his.
Kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah. It's a really awesome, like just way of like, it's just an awesome character.
One of my favorite moments.
I also love how his boss is Optimus Prime.
That's the voice actor. Peter Cullen?
Yeah, it's Peter Cullen.
I love the moment at the end of the season when he's completely ripped and then he fights Anissa and he's like, oh crap, I don't want them. I hope they don't see me. It's a Viltrumite ship.
Yeah,
he's so scared of them. And then Anissa comes out to kick his ass and then she punches him. He's like, oh, I didn't even feel that.
Yeah.
It was really very cool. Satisfying.
Mm-hmm. And also it shows how smart Alan is too, because he doesn't want to waste this opportunity. So he just pretends to get knocked out and sees if he can like recruit anybody on board or no, because he knew no one was captured because he met up with Mark earlier. So it's like, maybe this is where Nolan is. He doesn't really say that, but it's also goes to show how smart Alan is as well, like tactically wise.
Yeah. I also liked Adam Eve's story quite a bit. It was early on. It was very interesting to me where she's discovering more about her powers and, you know, her dad's all up in her face about, well, you know, don't make a golden apple for me. That's, your powers are dangerous. You don't really understand what you're doing with them. This is, being a superhero is a bad idea. Like, you don't have the wisdom or the knowledge to know what you're doing. I mean, he's more misogynistic about it than that, but his idea kind of ends up making sense by the time Eve, she tries to make that park for the kids and then is not up to code, and a lot of people could have gotten hurt. I'm like, I really like that, because she can make the park, but she's not an architect. She doesn't know how to make things structurally sound. She can do whatever she wants with her powers. Doesn't mean she knows how the world works. She can atomize whatever she wants, but it doesn't mean she's got more limits than she thinks. And she realizes it. Like, I don't think anyone got hurt in her park, but just the idea that somebody could have was traumatizing for her.
It destroys her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy that. And I don't think we've talked about the Adam Eve special, have we?
No, because it was part of season 2, so I think we were just going to lump it all.
Yeah, technically it was. Yeah. And I loved her, like, whole backstory in that episode with, like, her actual spoilers from Adam Eve special for her whole birth mom and her birth family and how she had to fight and, like, kill most of them as well and the doctor. I think it was a really good, like, one-off special origin story. And just sort of also explains her powers as well, like, oh, she could have had, like, organic, like, she could have manipulated organic tissue, but they put a chip in her head to sort of stop that power set because she would have been too powerful. And then her whole upbringing with, like, her adoptive family and how her dad is an absolute asshole. And that's what sucks about in season 2 is that he's right for once, instead of just being this misogynistic, like, pig. But, yeah, it's funny because it's like, I loved like Adam Eve's story kind like a little bit, but I didn't fully like care about it at the same time, because I knew it was like, oh, we're in the waiting period of, oh, she's going to go through this traumatic event. And then one of her old friends is going to come talk to her and snap her out of this, like, oh, I should be a superhero because responsibility and all that. I just didn't think it was going to be Rexplode. I didn't think he was going to have a redemption arc whatsoever. Yeah. So that was a nice scene.
For sure.
It's like, nice I to fuck see them. Up a lot.
Yeah, Jason Mantzoukas is one of the best actors on this show. He consistently makes me laugh every episode.
Yeah, he's really
he's the
good.
Best comic relief in the series. And I was very upset when Rexplode got shot in the head.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God. I was waiting for the Deus Ex Machina. I just had to wait a couple more minutes, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, I saw an interview with Robert Kirkman where he explained the concept behind that scene in his mind. Because he said when he was growing up, there was always these cliffhanger endings where the hero would be in mortal danger and you always knew they'd make it out. There was never really any stakes. So he said ever since he was a kid, he wanted to do a show where it looked like the hero was going to not make it out. And then the start of the next episode, they get shot in the head.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've read apparently the reason Rexplode was able to survive, it's explained because he was also a genetically modified superhero and the scientists made. So the fact that his powers are explosions, his tissue is stronger and able to like withstand the impact. So that's how he was able to survive the gunshot wound.
Sure.
That's what I've read.
I accepted Rex coming back to life. Yeah. Look, okay, what I'll say is I accepted Alan coming back to life because that was his power. I accepted Rex coming back to life because he has a new lease on life now. He's got a redemption arc going on. I do not accept Shrinking Ray and Duplicate being alive.
No.
That felt like a massive cop-out.
Especially Duplicate's because it's like right at the tail end of the season. So you're just kind of like... And she's wearing this giant zero on her shirt. It's like, oh, there's not the prime duplicate. It's not one. It's zero. It's like, because I hated dying so much. And it's like, so all this immortal, like, development that we're getting of him being the tough guy, and then he finally loses someone that pushes him over the edge. Yeet! Like, it's gone. Like, what are we doing here? Now he's just going to be fine, right? Or he's going to be overprotective. What's, like, what are we doing with Kate now?
Yeah, we buried her, so she just secretly, she's just in hiding now. And Shrinking Ray, like, well, okay, that was kind of
a
coma.
I don't even remember what Shrinking Ray does. I know she got spat out, but like, I don't even remember her waking up.
She broke all her bones.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, so she's just in a coma now. But I don't see any functional story reason for those two to have survived. I thought their deaths meant something when they happened because it was, oh crap, they got taken out by the Lizard League. Like these are Guardians of the Globe. They're some of the best, and the Lizard League took them out. You kind of go in overconfident after so long of everyone dissing on that group. But it was like, oh wow, they got messed up bad. Like all three of them died.
And then it just throws all the stakes out the window that, like, nobody died. Literally nobody died. Except bugs. Bug people died.
Yeah, the bug people died. Yeah, and that was all the fault of the finale, mostly. I mean, I know Shrinking Ray survived the end, and Rexplode survived that episode. And that bugged me enough. But then Duplicate coming back put the nail in the coffin for me for that. And that's my problem with the finale in general is the finale in general, I feel like walked back too much. It was kind of a cop out on many stories. They brought Duplicate back to life. And I'm not going to say the Monster Girl Rudy thing was a bad resolution, but it felt like they kind of did two steps forward, one step back there. She kind of just forgave him
still...
and they're moving on.
Yeah, it's still weird because it's like, you can help me, but just like ask me first. And it's like, you know, this man, I'm just going to say it, who was a man, but he was stuck in a tube, stole this other dude's DNA to be around the same age as you so he could date a teenager. She's probably older than that, but still, like, date a teenager girl from the visual. Yeah, but it's just like, that's gross. Like, what are we doing here? And well, I know it's sort of like, that's the joke of it. And the whole relationship is toxic as a whole. But it's just, it's very strange.
It's weird because they're both like 30.
Yeah, but it's
they are the same age, gross. Physically and mentally. It's so I guess it's okay, but it's still, yeah. The worst part of it is that she keeps getting younger.
That's what it is. It's like you're, it's gross.
He's aging up and she's aging down now. Yeah. Very strange relationship. Who else got walked back? Yeah, the Immortals plot line with Duplicate, that got walked back as well. All the trauma he went through.
Yeah.
Other ones kind of just
walked back at the very end, so we'll know. We don't really know like how much that will affect him in the later season. Maybe he'll just be super overprotective of everybody, or maybe they just won't care at all. But
yeah,
that's a
all right. So like in season one, they basically just rebuilt Debbie's house again. Oliver's okay. Everything's just kind of okay where they were at the start of episode 8. They kind of end there too. The one that pissed me off was that future Adam Eve from the other galaxy was like, okay, so just like one thing I need you to do is just like acknowledge she's got feelings for you, just because like I held that in for way too long. Like, you don't have to say anything, but just like talk about it at all. She needs to hear something. And then Mark chickens out.
Well, yeah, because it's not really the right time. He's kind of been through a bit of a traumatic event there, so I don't fully blame him for that.
I don't fully blame him for it. His mom got murdered.
He killed somebody for the first time. He doesn't feel it's the right time to have that conversation with her, but he still sort of puts his head on her shoulder. So it's not like it's literally not the it's not the right time for him. He's not the best at expressing emotion. And you've understand that because in the scene before he talks with his mom, like, I gotta leave college. I can't be a superhero and
be better
and do college. I have to be better, and you need to understand that. I need you to be okay with that. So yeah, like that, the Adam Eve stuff didn't bother me. It was just kind of like, oh, here's another tease of what's to come for this relationship.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just disappointing. Like, I can justify a lot of it, but it didn't satisfy me. Yeah, because you want to see
those two get together.
Or at least acknowledge the feelings openly to end the season. Something. Like, I feel like they could have done more. Like, you didn't have to end with them in a relationship, but even just the acknowledgement of it out loud would be, okay, there's a little bit of resolution there. Something. I think
he does acknowledge it. He does it very subtly with the head on the shoulder. It's just not a verbal thing. He just went through this entire dramatic event, and now he's just going to be like, by the way, I know you're in love with me, but I don't want to do anything right now. Like, what's that going to solve? Nothing. Because he can't fully comprehend his feelings for her as well.
Yeah. Well, what it would do is give her some peace of mind. Because that's what her future self said. She just needs to hear something, anything.
Right. But, like, it's not the right time.
Yeah, but
he has to do it instantly. He has to do it right away. Like, right after the traumatic event. I don't know. She can wait, like, a month or two. Probably is going to be a bit more. But, you know.
Once again, you can justify it. I wasn't satisfied watching it, but I understand it. That's why I'm having a tough time complaining too much about the finale, but it did disappoint me in many ways, except where Mark's story was concerned. All the bits with him coming to terms with his murder and everything, that was all amazing. Sets up season 3 really well. Everybody else's story, I feel like the status quo just sort of stayed the same or even went back one or two steps compared to where they were in the last few episodes. Like, and it was only disappointing because I liked what they were doing with the supporting cast for so much of the season. Mm-hmm. They built all these stories up so well, and I didn't feel like their resolutions were earned. or didn't go far enough in the end. I just wanted to see.
I think it's just like, because I know they're working on season three right now.
Yeah.
And just especially with the Adam Eve stuff. I think it's good that they waited for Mark and Eve to sort of talk about their whole relationship, because it is built up a lot in this season as well, with all like the awkward hugs they have with each other, or like they hug for too long and like, what is this feeling? Oh, geez. And I understand what you're saying. It's like, it's not very satisfactory, but I don't think that makes it a bad thing at the same time. But I completely agree with you with the other side character stuff, where aside from Rexplode, who his power set, and then the Alan stuff, I was absolutely hating that Shrink and Ray and Kate are fine. There's no stakes now. Or if there is, I feel like they're going to, I won't trust them. I feel like they'll write some sort of thing for them to come back again. It's just, it feels too comic booky and not grounded, of which the show has been since the beginning. So this show started with the entire Justice League getting murdered. And now nobody's dying. It's just, it sucks.
They're going to bring all them back too, probably. I mean, they already brought the Immortal. The only one they brought back was the Immortal. And that's, once again, that's kind of his power. So that's why I accepted Alan as well, because that's his thing. But anyway, what else here? See, now that I did forgive the show for doing stuff like that in episode 6, because episode 6 was called It's Not That Simple. And a lot of these kind of half-assed resolutions were happening in episode 6. But I took a look at that title, applied it to the episode, and was like, okay, well, everything happening here is going to have more consequences later. Like, like Rex got shot and he lived. But, oops, he's probably going to be pretty messed up from that experience. That's when they fought the Sequid army. And the aliens are like, okay, but we want Shapesmith to answer for his crimes. And they're like, nope, peace out. Multi-planet incident where we take out all these Martian ships and save a fugitive. That might be a problem later. Save the day, but it's not that simple. That's also the episode they fixed Rick. But he's got mental problems because of it. Not that simple.
Yeah.
Shrinking Ray lived. All her bones are broken. Not that simple. Mark and Amber are finally getting time together, but they don't have chemistry anymore. So, like, that episode, they had a lot of... that episode, they had a lot of seeming wins, and I thought that was interesting. Funny enough, I think I would have been more disappointed with that episode if I hadn't seen the title and applied it properly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have the same mindset as you did. I still think that's the worst episode of the season, but other than that, you know, I still think overall it was a good runner up to season 1. I still prefer season 1 because it just, the cohesive story for me was much better.
I like season 2 more, actually.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Well, because season
I knew you would. I knew you would, because like, oh, I miss episodic television, and season 2 was so episodic.
I thought season 2 was I thought season 2 was masterfully written that way. Every episode was episodic, but moved the story along at the same time. If like Mark wasn't the star, somebody else's story moved forward. Like things moved forward every episode. Maybe not the main plot, but like B plots at least were moving forward every episode. Like there was always momentum happening. And what I like more about season 2 was that it went deeper on the subject matter. Season 1, all the stuff with Nolan was really interesting. But think about Mark. Mark's biggest problem in season 1 was, oh, but what if I can get Amber to date me? And, you know, it's hard to balance being a superhero with being a good boyfriend. It's okay. It's fine, but Mark was the least interesting character in the show that season.
His biggest problem is not Amber, like, trying to fuck Amber. His biggest problem is he wants to be like his dad, and he wants to be a superhero. It's the one thing he's wanted his entire life. And yeah, the Amber stuff is kind of like a side plot. And that's what, because his biggest goal is to be the superhero just like his dad, because we all look up to our fathers. But it turns out his dad is an absolute fucking terrorist, like an alien who is trying to take over the entire world. And it's just a great cohesive story of, you don't really, why did Omni-Man kill the main superhero team? You don't know throughout the entire show. And then finally he reveals in episode 8, it's because I need to take over the planet. These guys are going to get in the way. Mark, I need your help. I'm not from a peaceful organization. I'm actually from the worst organization possible. It's like if Krypton still survived and they're trying to take over everybody.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. And it's a great cohesive story. And in season 2, what's the cohesive story? Angstrom shows up in episode 1. He pops up here and there at end credit scenes. That makes it worse. That's
not. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't, because that's not what TV's all about. The cohesive story. Okay, I'll tell you. It's not a start to finish story. But it's all about, in season 1, that was all it really had going for it. It was a cool mystery. It was interesting episodically too. I enjoyed it. Season 2 took everything made season 1 great and one-upped it. All the characters have a lot more depth to them now. They're all going through severe emotional traumas. Everybody's got something going on, and they're all interesting. I care so much more about the characters in season 2. The stakes are a lot bigger now. It's not just Nolan. It's the entire Viltrumite Empire has got their eyes set on Earth. And Mark is dealing with bigger responsibilities now. It's not just, can I get this girl to date me? Or, oh, can I kind of be a decent superhero? It's, what if I turn into a murderous, genocidal maniac like my father, and I can't balance being a superhero with being a decent boyfriend and son? I'm letting a lot of people down. I'm not powerful enough. I murdered a man at the end of the season. The Viltrumites want me to be their ambassador for Earth. Like, he's got so much more on his mind this season than he's completely lost his innocence. The Guardians of the Globe are still getting messed up. Duplicate, Rex, Shrinking Ray.
And
they
half
all got
that shit from the Guardians of the Globe gets taken back, so it doesn't matter for the entirety of the show. Like, all that trauma that happened does not matter by the end of it. Literally, by the end of it, it's like, oh, I'm back to life now. It doesn't matter. They were just like, hey, by the way, you know all that trauma you went through, Immortal, with losing your girlfriend that you actually really cared about but never fully admitted to it? I'm still alive, by the way.
Yeah, for
so,
the
like,
Immortal,
okay, so there's no life lesson.
Well, for the Immortal, that's true, but I'll defend. I don't like that they brought Kate back to life, but to the world, she's dead now. And now that's a secret they're going to have to keep. There is a consequence. Shrinking Ray, she's completely, her bones are all broken. I don't think she's got super healing or anything. She's probably not going to be okay, even though she lived. Rex has a completely new lease on life. Alan is a lot more powerful now. Debbie's the main one for me. She went to a very, very low place.
Debbie's
this
story's
season.
Good. Yeah.
Like, this season is all about how low can we bring our characters to show you who they really are. Season 1 does not have that kind of emotional weight season 2 does. I don't care that it was, yeah, maybe it's a more interesting binge watch, but I watch shows for the characters, and the characters had a lot more depth pulled out of them this season. They had a lot more thought-provoking moments and philosophies. The world building was greater. The stakes were higher. The action was bigger. The character interactions had more heart to them. There was more nuance to it, too. It was just better for me.
I don't know. I still think anything between Mark and Nolan far surpasses anything that's happened in this season. So much so that episode 4 wasn't mostly entirely them, or was entirely them. And it is the best episode of the season. And that is the best emotional weight in the show, not in season, well, that, but also in season 2 at the very end, where he's literally beating the shit out of his son. And then he's saying, what will you have after 500 years? I'll still have you, Dad. That is the best emotional weight anything in this show is that it's still is like, it's, yeah, you have to beat this evil guy, but he's still your father. That's the most emotional weight in this entire show. That's the biggest emotional weight. Fucking duplicate's story is thrown out the window. Shrinkery's thrown out the window. Alan is just, oh, I'm stronger now. Immortals, I'm sad because my girlfriend's dead, but she's not anymore. Adam Eve, she gets over it in two episodes. Rexplode is just funny, so I accept that. But there's nothing beating Mark and Nolan's story for me.
Mark and Nolan's story still gets deepened. Omni-Man's on his redemption arc. Mark is on a downward spiral. It builds. It's not...
Yeah, it builds. Sometimes and then it goes back.
Not with them two. Not with...
No, not with them. Because you don't see fucking Nolan for half the season, which is fine. I accept that as a choice because you don't want to overuse him.
Look, I'll compare it to our Guardians 1 versus Guardians 2 debate. And in this debate, I always said Guardians 1 was the better movie, but Guardians 2 is the reason I care about the Guardians. Guardians 1 has a better plot on paper. It's more of a, okay, if I'm going to watch a season of TV or watch a movie, Guardians is more palatable to just pop in. But Guardians 2 and Invincible Season 2, they're the reason I give a crap about any of the characters in this world. They deepen the mythology, the world. They have a lot of great one-on-one moments that make me care about the relationships and moving forward. They make the previous installment better in retrospect because they add new information. Like, I can't imagine Guardians 1 without Guardians 2 now because I know everyone's backgrounds more, what they're all about. And I have just further context to give a crap in general. So it's, I'm not trying to argue season 2 had a more cohesive plot, but I enjoyed it more because it took what I loved and built upon it.
That's fair.
Didn't diminish it.
I just need more for me personally, a more cohesive plot. Like, and I'm not saying I needed like Angstrom Levy to be in every fucking episode at the end, because I think that would have been cheesy as well. But yeah, it felt like I didn't know what the main goal was throughout the whole. And I know like the whole character growth and all that, like I understood that, but that wasn't really like, it just felt like a building block or a setup season almost, because there was that looming threat of the Viltrumites. But those to me aren't really like the best. Those are kind of like in turn, like I'm not saying this is a bad season. I think it's on par with the first season. But to me, those are like sort of in quote unquote the worst at seasons of like a show. Well, like, what's the plot? What can you really describe besides people start to feel? Oh, cool.
Well, that's what I was trying to say, though, is I do think it is a build-up season, but it's also when season 3 comes out, everyone will be glad we had season 2 to set it up. You can't, you can't just jump from plot point to plot point. That's not what stories are. Everyone wants the main story right now, but you need the downtime between big events for everyone to mull things over and take for in sure. the new status quo and just kind of emotionally change. Like it's the thing that usually happens between sequels where people like get better and process. And I think that's an important thing to show in stories where we had all this big traumatic stuff happen. And now we've got to process it, knowing the next big thing's on the horizon. That doesn't help, but we got to power through all this as is. Just take a breather. And I think more stories should do things like that. I'm sick of big events after big events. We need more downtime to just live in the world.
Yeah.
Especially on TV.
I just feel like I just feel like a build-up season for, like, season two is a bit early, in my opinion. It's usually around, like, the season three, season four mark. But I didn't hate this because it's still strong writing. It's still strong characters. Yeah. Didn't hate it at all. But I just love season one as a whole. Just because I love Omni-Man so much.
Look, he's a really fantastic character. From my perspective, I'm gonna call you a little bit biased because you've lived with season one longer than me. I basically finished season one right before I saw season two. So to me, it basically all blurs together as one. I don't have any nostalgia for season one. I didn't have the wait for season two.
Well, then that's your fault.
Yeah. I didn't do the wait for season two. The 2 year wait, like everybody else, I kind of just jumped from one into the other. So from that perspective, to me, I like what season two did. Mind you, I'm not saying anyone should start with season two. You can't watch season two without seeing season one. It's like reading a book.
Obviously.
It's like jumping to chapter 9 in a book. Like you gotta, like it requires season one what season one did. If season one wasn't that good, season two wouldn't matter whatsoever. But that's kind of the problem with any sequel. I just respect a sequel that builds on what came before without diminishing what came before. And usually I like sequels better when they do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't care how big the plot is. Yeah. I mean, look at Empire Strikes Back. What happens in Empire Strikes Back? Basically nothing. The rebels get their ass kicked at the very beginning. They're kind of just on the run the entire movie. And then there's an emotional climax where they get their asses kicked again. Like, the good guys don't thwart any of the bad guys' plans. There's no Death Star on the horizon. Nothing happens in that movie. It's all just, okay, what, like, we're all just kind of on the run from the last big battle.
You still feel the weight of it between the Luke and Darth Vader fight, especially with how low-powered Luke is and how powerful Darth Vader is. And then there's that epic, you know, spoiler alert, I am your father. And just in comparison with the end of this season, the fight was cool. I really liked it, but I didn't feel how I felt watching the first end fight. Like, I felt like the stakes were much higher in the final fight for Invincible season one than it was at the end of season two. Because here, yes, he's about to murder his mother and his half brother. And the whole design of the fight is cool, the dimension hopping. But I think what saves that fight is his reaction afterwards. Is his whole, like, trauma afterwards and his him arguing with himself and him having a mental breakdown. That was the main focus of it, and I'd like that they went in that direction.
The
Instead
stakes
of just
were
being
more,
like, oh, the fight's over and we're done.
The stakes were more personal in many ways for, like, season one. Like, yeah, the stakes were bigger on a global scale. Nolan was wrecking a whole lot, and Mark was still coming to terms with the fact his father was evil. But he never really had time to process that in season one. It was kind of like, oh, well, that happened, and I'm very confused about this still, basically right up to the end. Like, I'm upset and I'm confused. But season two is when you really unpack all that stuff. And I think at the end of season two, when he kills Levy, he, like you said, he's wandering around the desert. He's processing. You get more resolution for what happened in this season, at the end of this season, as far as Mark's concerned. And also, once again, it's like, I don't really care about the people Nolan was killing. He was kind of just killing random people around the world. And, like, you get a sense of the scale of it. Wow, this is really bad. But when Angstrom Levy breaks Debbie's arm and looks like he's going to kill Oliver too, I care more about that than just the random violence Nolan's perpetrating. Like, it feels like a big deal, but I actually care about the season two fight. Like, because the stakes are more personal and grounded. Not that, like, he's fighting his father. That is personal. But it's just, Mark just never had the emotional space to process it as it was happening. It all just kind of came at him really quickly. And this one, he's more an active participant in the fight. He has the power to hold things back or keep pushing it forward, and he finishes it. Just because Mark had more agency in it made it interesting.
Do you not remember the whole argument before the fight between Mark and Nolan? Like, that was him processing, like, what the fuck is going on? It's like, why'd you just kill a mortal, like your friend, right in front of me? And then now you're saying I have to enslave every single person that I love? You just called my mom a pet? Now you're pissing, like, you're just pissing me off. And, like, the senseless violence is like, yeah, you don't care about those people, but it's not, you're not supposed to care about the individual. You're caring about the entirety of humanity. Like, this guy who you've supposed to trust, who is your father, is now not mercilessly killing a bunch of random civilians because he thinks it's better for the humanity, or the better for humanity that he takes control over him. It's the guy you're supposed to trust first is your dad. That is so emotional for Mark. And sorry he doesn't process it right away afterwards, because he's half fucking dead, so he has to heal first. He was, like, out for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, the emotional impact after the fight in season 2 is much better, because it's the first time he's actually won, like, in that way where he's killed somebody. And season 1, he just doesn't, it's just kind of like the, okay, let's just calm the fuck down. He's left, but we don't know when he's coming back. And they still have, like, some emotion to it.
Yep. Definitely. I just can't do world-ending stakes at the end of every season. I can't do it on any show.
I didn't say the end of the season had to be world-ending. I just don't. I just didn't feel just there was a cohesive plot all the way through.
I'm just trying to defend the lower stakes finale in the setup for season 3. Like, I know season 3 is going to be grander.
It's going to be insane.
Yeah. I just don't think season 2 should be discounted because it was more episodic. Not. Like, that's what TV is. I don't want to go on my whole rant about it, but TV is episodic. The 8-hour movie is a dumbass idea that should never have been invented.
Mm-hmm. But it's what a lot of people are doing now in modern television, because it gets,
because they're stupid sheep following the trends.
Are you watching Shogun?
Yeah.
That's a novel story. It's not
miniseries.
Phenomenal?
Miniseries. Different thing.
It's still 8 hours.
Miniseries are a different beast.
Oh, it's my God. Let's making, move on. We're moving on.
No. Okay.
You just said eight-hour movies are stupid. It's a miniseries. That's 8 hours.
No, different thing. When you make a series, seasons are meant to go for multiple years. It's not the same thing as something like Shogun, where it's adapting a novel. It's limited by design. You're adapting it and giving it room to breathe. You're telling a story that's got a definitive ending. There will never be another season of Shogun. You're just taking extra time to tell one story. Something like Invincible by design is a episodic comic book kind of thing. Like, it's issue by issue, episode by episode. It ran for over a decade, for a very long time. You can't just do continuous story arcs like that. You have to have breathing. Like, TV as a medium isn't meant to be a finite story or a series of finite stories. It's perpetual. Like, you can have arcs, but whole season arcs are meant to be broken up. It's like, it's just the medium. Miniseries and TV shows are different things with different rules. Yeah, they're all episodic, but there are different things.
I'm moving on. What the hell? I scrolled way too far down. I'm trying to remember if there's anything else we didn't talk about. Oh, the animation budget got bigger. That's cool. I'm glad they got that. There's like a clear difference between the budget. But then it's funny when they make fun of that budget in like episode 6. That was really funny. Which is like a very meta joke of, I know you brought this up earlier. I thought that was very funny. It was like, sometimes we cover our faces so it gives time. And then the background shots where someone's talking over, but nobody's actually moving. That's so funny.
Sometimes you film the back of a person's head while they're talking.
It's really good. Very funny.
Yeah. I could go on for a while longer talking about all the intricacies of the show. Like, I could talk about Debbie for a while, too, because she's my favorite.
Yeah, Debbie's great.
But we already... I don't have much... I could... I'll just sum it up there. Debbie's great.
Debbie's great.
She's my favorite character. She's not even a hero or anybody, but she's one of the strongest people on that story world. And Sandro does a great job. And...
she's amazing.
Yeah. She's just consistently the best for me. Yeah, there's probably other stuff to talk about, but we're already at an hour and a half, so that's probably a... I don't know how much more in-depth to get.
Nah.
Action's great still.
Brutal as ever. Better.
Animation's
just because the animation
better,
got,
like you said,
more budget.
Music was good.
The music subtext, is very good.
Yeah, told the subtext pretty well. Editing was solid.
Mm-hmm.
Always could tell what was happening. Just technically it was... that's why we're talking story mostly, because technically it's hard to beat, really.
Yeah.
In terms of filmmaking prowess.
It was worth the wait. Speaking of waiting, do you want to move on to my question of the week?
Yeah.
Do you think the 3-month mid-season break drowned the hype for this show?
Yep.
I agree.
Yeah. I think people were very excited about getting the start of season 2 after, I believe it was an 18-month hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll speak from personal experience. I was pretty excited for the start. And then episode 4 came out, and it was a great cliffhanger on episode 4, but I didn't really think about Invincible too much again in the ensuing months. I thought, well... okay, I'll look forward to it when it comes out. And I think when it did come out, I missed like 3 of the episodes. I didn't hop onto it again until till the week episode 8 released. I caught up on the last 3 and then watched episode 8 the day it came out. But I didn't even know it came out when it returned. So,
yeah,
I definitely
wasn't
keeping up on it.
What I found is really bullshit about it. They took a break, and they said their reasoning was because of the holidays. They didn't want to release episodes during the holidays because everybody's at home or spending time with their family, which, you know, is kind of stupid because you're at home. You're probably watching stuff, so you probably watch stuff with family. But anyway, there's a rumor going around that the real reason that they took a break until March, because they said it would come out early winter of 2024. March is not winter. And the reason they said that is because they want the holiday break. But the real reason a lot of people are speculating on is because Amazon came out with their new advertisements or their new ad things. So if you have just a regular Prime account and you're watching television or movies, you'll sometimes get ad breaks in between episodes. like kind of like commercials did, like they used to. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they wait for that, they wait is for that to come out and then the next half of the season to come out so they can make a little bit more money, which is weird because Amazon is probably one of the biggest global phenomenons out there. And why do they need more money? But hey, whatever. So that's why I think it's also bullshit. But for just also the hype diminishing as well, it really sucks when you're like going into it, you're getting all the hype. And I will give them some credit. Where they took a break was probably the best way they could have taken a break, with Marcus all injured on the bug planet, Omni-Man's being taken away. So it's like, oh, fuck, what's going to happen? But then you get to the next episode, and it's just like, oh, he's just dealing with the trauma from the last episode. It's like, oh, I didn't need to wait 3 months for this. I would have felt probably better if I waited a week for it. And, yeah, it's just kind of like, I don't know. It just seems a little schemey. It seems a little bit like, okay, you're lying to us. Why you're holding back in this season? And also, just I always hated mid-season breaks. They used to do that for The Walking Dead a lot. When it was like 24 episodes a season, they'd release the first 12 and then the next 12 a few months later. And it just dies the hype down. And when they don't announce it a lot like they used to, you forget about it. Like you said you did. You're like, oh, I didn't realize it was out. So you just kind of, you forget about it, and then you start to forget everything that's happened in the first half. So you just kind of need to, like, recap of everything. But, yeah. Overall, it didn't fully diminish the second season for me, but it just kind of pissed me off.
I don't mind a mid-season break in principle. I understood why they did it back then and why Invincible would do it now. Only thing is, mid-season breaks didn't used to be so long. They used to be maybe 2 weeks, just around Christmas, New Year's, and then you're back to it. Some of them waited till February at the very latest to start again, but you know, not 3 months.
Yeah, ridiculous.
So
absolutely ridiculous.
If they'd waited only a month or two, I think that would have even been okay, but every week that went,
everybody I talked to who was watching it at work, they kind of accepted it like past the holidays because we were also so busy, so they accepted that. But 3 months, like, that's insane.
Okay, maybe here's another conspiracy theory. Just thinking about, just spitballing on the spot.
Ooh, I like this.
They're working on season 3 right now. Yeah.
Yes.
So maybe they thought, let's cut our losses. If we put everything out all at once, it's probably going to be another 18-month wait for season 3. So if we dole out season 2 by a couple months in the middle, the wait between the end of season 2 to the start of season 3, we'll look better because it won't look like as long as the last gap.
Okay.
They're trying to make themselves... They're trying to make themselves look better for the season 2 to season 3 break.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because I also saw an interview with Robert Kirkman where he said, oh, yeah, the season 2 to season 3 gap won't be as long. That's the only reason I'm thinking.
Well.
Was it is this a factor? Were they delaying by 3 months just so that those 3 months weren't on the other side of season 2?
We'll never know. We'll never know. I don't know. Yeah. I've just never been a fan of mid-season breaks because I feel like a week is perfect for episodic television. When you release them all, one by one, you get that whole week of theorizing and it's stuck in your brain all week. It gets you hyped up for the next week. 3 months? I forgot about it like weeks on end sometimes. And then I'd be Google like, okay, when's it coming out? Oh, still not? Okay. And then you forget about it for another 4 weeks. It's just like, I didn't start watching it again until I think episode 6 was out. So it's just kind of like, what are we doing here? And if it is because of the Amazon ad shit, I'll be so mad. But I won't be able to do anything about it at the same time.
I mean, that's possible, but if they knew Amazon ads was going to come out 3 months from then, they should have known the month before when Invincible started. They should have just delayed the whole show till it came out. I don't know. It's weird. They just made that decision within the month and they're like, oh, well, let's delay another 3 months.
Well, it's like they delayed for the holiday and then the ads were coming out. So maybe Amazon's like, we're going to hold off on it. We're going to hold off on it for a little while.
It wasn't good either way. I don't know why they did.
No, I don't think there's any good reason for doing it.
No. Just trying to figure out a reason that seemed like a good idea.
They forgot to draw the rest of it.
Maybe. I've also heard that as a theory, too, where they just weren't done yet. Somehow.
Yeah, which doesn't make sense. Because why would you start releasing a season if you're not done it?
Yeah.
Which is weird because there's like that trend in Hollywood right now where they've, especially with Marvel movies, they'll start releasing movies and then like on the DVD or the streaming, like they've retouched some of the effects. It's really weird.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I just burped. Yeah. Oh, well. Still a good season. Still a great show. Can't wait for season 3. Pray I find a omnibus that's cheaper than going for 100 later on. So, yeah. I'm excited for season 3.
Yeah, me as well. In 2 years.
Yeah.
We'll probably be here. Check back in then.
We'll be here. We'll be here. Still arguing.
Well, if we weren't arguing, why are you watching?
Exactly. Don't worry. Don't worry, guys. Come back after June or July when House of the Dragon season 2 comes out.
Yep. Team green.
Team black.
For the win. All right. Plug your socials.
All right. You can find me at Ryan Walker Official on YouTube, TikTok, and on Instagram.
You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at Thought Plane Media. Also, check out the Close Up with Ryan and Joe Facebook page for latest updates on the show. If you listen to us in audio, check out our YouTube channel. And if you're on YouTube, find us anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. We hope to see you on the next Close Up with Ryan and Joe, where we take down the Hollywood marketing system and wish Ryan luck on getting that omnibus. Till next time.
Take care.